On Canonical, we deal with subject matters that may not be suitable for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Tara Calico regularly rode her bike along a 36-mile route on New Mexico State Road 47. According to her mother, she rode the same route almost every day. On September 20th of 1988, Tara set off on her ride, joking with her mother to come and find her if she hadn't returned by 12. She had plans with her boyfriend that afternoon, after all. 12 came and Tara didn't. Her mother set out on the route to find her daughter, but Tara was nowhere to be found. She was just gone. This is Canonical. Before we dig into the day that Tara disappeared, we'd best learn a little bit about her. Tara Lee Calico was born on February 28, 1969, to parents Patty and David Calico in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She was a gifted young woman, going on to take college classes in her senior year of high school before graduating and taking a job at Billings First National Bank. She worked at the bank for 11 months before she quit in August of 1988 to attend school full-time. Her mother, Patty, was a long-serving employee of the Santa Fe Railway, and at the time of Tara's disappearance, she was working as an assistant trainmaster for the BNSF Railroad in Belen. She and Tara's father had separated in January of 1975, and Patty had begun seeing fellow railroad employee John Dole. Like Patty, John was also divorced and had two children of his own. They married in June of 1975, and John reportedly loved the feisty six-year-old Tara like his own. Tara was a responsible, kind, and organized person. She'd grown to be very independent at a young age. Apparently, she even cooked her own breakfast before she was tall enough to reach the stove. She was a very athletic young woman and had been on her high school track team, played tennis, and of course, took a long bike ride almost every morning. This brings us to the morning of September 20th, 1988, the day Tara disappeared. September 20th was a beautiful day in Belen, New Mexico. At around 9:30 that morning, Tara decided to go for a bike ride. She would have usually been riding with her mother, but after an incident which left her mother feeling like they were being followed, she was venturing out alone. Patty had tried to convince Tara that she should carry mace, but Tara had disagreed. Her ride usually took her around 2 hours to complete, and that morning she had joked with her mother to come and get her if she had not returned at noon. She had plans with her boyfriend at 12:30, so she had plenty of time to go on the ride, come home, and get ready to go out with him before then. She grabbed her Walkman, headphones, and a cassette tape from the band Boston and climbed on her mother's neon pink Huffy mountain bike and left their house to ride her regular route along New Mexico State Road 47. NM-47 is a 59.6-mile or 96-kilometre highway which passes through Bernalillo, Valencia and Sirocco counties before coming to an intersection with US 60. Tara's route would take her along the lower half of NM-47 with a mostly straight line southeast of Rio communities down to the railroad tracks near Diablo Road before turning back home. The total length of Tara's route was about 34 miles, or 55 kilometres in a round trip, and from witness statements it is generally assumed that the first half of Tara's ride was fairly uneventful. She biked the 17 miles, or 27 kilometres, to the railroad, turned around and began the journey home. At 11:30, two ranch hands saw her biking north in the direction of her home, and she was seen again at 11:45 by three men driving south, heading home from a hunting trip. However, these three men also spotted something unsettling. Tara was pedaling alone on her pink bike, wearing headphones apparently unaware that she was being followed. An older-looking, off-white pickup truck followed closely behind her. Shortly after this sighting, Tara was seen again, the same off-white pickup still following her about 4.5 miles or 7 kilometres from Rio communities. That was the last time Tara was seen alive. Petty Doll, meanwhile, was waiting for her sister to return, but 12 came and Tara didn't. So, at 12:05, Petty set off looking for her. She drove all the way to the railroad, Tara's halfway mark, and didn't see her. She drove home and back to the railroad again. In all, she completed the round trip twice before heading home and contacting the local hospital, thinking perhaps Tara had been in an accident and ended up there. Nobody matching Tara's description had been admitted. She even enlisted a few of Tara's friends to help her look for her that afternoon, but when they couldn't find any sign of Tara or Patty's neon bike, Patty called the Valencia County Sheriff's Office. The sheriff himself, Lawrence Romero, immediately suspected foul play. In a statement, he states that, "We feel this is an involuntary disappearance. We understand from talking to her parents and friends that this is totally out of character for her to turn up missing." The day after Tara disappeared, on the west side of the highway, about 4 miles or about 6.5 kilometres away from Rio Communities, police found a bike track which had veered off the road onto a soft shoulder and led to tyre tracks with a fresh oil slick about 100 yards, which is around 90 metres away. There was also a brief trail of footprints leading to Tara's Boston cassette tape, some old Milwaukee beer cans, and the plastic window from her Walkman. Detectives were also following up on other leads, interviewing people up and down NM47 who may have seen Tara on her ride. 7 witnesses turned up and underwent hypnosis to varying results. Police also ruled out any connection to the case of Deborah Lansell, a 29-year-old nurse who had gone missing from Berlin under suspicious circumstances on September 21, 1985. A bike water bottle had also been found in someone's yard. This was originally believed to have been Tara's, but was ruled out as Tara had been riding her mother's bike, which didn't have a water bottle holder. A patch of earth, which had been disturbed on the side of NM47, was also dug up, as was a field after a tip from a woman had called to report digging the day after Tara vanished. Nothing was found in either place. 3 men were also questioned, when police found them sitting in the back of a pickup drinking beer. However, the beer they were drinking was Bud, not Old Milwaukee, which had been found with Tara's cassette tape. On September 24th, the rest of Tara's Walkman was found 20 miles or about 32 kilometres away from where the other piece and cassette tape had been found. The Walkman was at the entrance to the remote John F. Kennedy campground at the base of the Manzano Mountains. Over 300 searchers scoured the mountains and the River Bosque, but after nothing was found, the effort was scaled back on September 27th. On October 25th, Sheriff Romero announced that they had come to believe that at least 2 men were involved in Tara's abduction. This was based on witness statements in which 2 men were seen in the white pickup. The driver was believed to have been around 35 to 45 years old, a white male with reddish brown hair and between 5'9 and 6 foot. He was about 190 to 210 pounds and had blue or hazel eyes. The vehicle itself was a mid-50s to early 60s Ford pickup. It had a camper shell, chrome wheels and oversized tires. It had New Mexico plates beginning with either WBY or WBZ and ended in the number 6. The sketch released by the sheriff generated over 100 tips and led to 4 interviews, but no arrests were made. Months later, on June 15, 1989, 1,500 miles or 2,500 kilometres away from Valencia County, a woman found a photograph. She'd been leaving a convenience store in Port St. Joe, Florida, and found a Polaroid discarded on the ground. It was sitting where a white Toyota van had been when she'd entered the store. The photo was of a teen girl and a young boy, gagged with duct tape and wrists bound behind their backs, lying in the back of a van. The woman described the man she says was driving the van to police as in his 30s and having a moustache. Officers set up roadblocks, but the vehicle was gone. The company who made the film confirmed that the film itself had been made after May of 1989. In the following month, the TV show A Current Affair released the photo during the show. A few members of Tara's family were watching and realised that the girl in the photo strongly resembled her, albeit without her usual perm or makeup. Patty pointed out that the girl in the photo had a scar on her leg, just like Tara did. In the book in the photo, My Sweet Andrina, written by V.C. Andrews, was Tara's favourite. Patty and John had the photo analysed by Scotland Yard, who determined it was Tara, but the Valencia County DA sent it to the Los Alamos National Laboratory, who concluded it wasn't her. The FBI also analysed the photo, but their results were inconclusive. Several names of missing children were tossed into the mix as to who the boy in the photo may be. The most likely seemed to be 10-year-old Michael Henley, who had disappeared 5 months before Tara. He'd been with his father in the Zuni Mountains, and while his father was setting up camp, Michael disappeared. Both Tara and Michael's parents flew to Florida to study the photo. Both believe that the people in the photo are their children, but this has unfortunately never been conclusively confirmed. An additional 2 photos surfaced later, supposedly showing Tara in bondage, but Patty was less sure that these were of her daughter and the photos were never released to the public. Unfortunately, it was confirmed that the boy in the photo was not Michael Henley after his remains were found in the Zuni Mountains in 1990. They were found 7 miles or about 11 kilometres from where he'd gone missing. Foul play was ruled out in Michael's death and it is assumed that he died of hypothermia. In 1991, Patty and John Dole became deputies in order to do their own search for Tara. They pursued leads on their own and using the sheriff's copy machine, they printed over 80,000 flyers. They had, of course, been there since the beginning and said, for instance, that 3 potential suspects had killed themselves before police even got to them, and that they had decided they wanted to search themselves. Jay Eschenberg, contract investigator of the DA's office, said in a statement to the Albuquerque Journal in November of 1996 that Tara's abduction was a violent crime, a crime of opportunity, that led to her being sexually assaulted and murdered. Investigators had assumed that she was kidnapped by more than one person due to her physical fitness, and Eschenberg himself identified 3 suspects he believed may have been involved. The case went mostly cold until September of 2008 when then-Sheriff Rene Rivera announced to the public that he knew what had happened to Tara Calico. He believed that 4 boys who knew Tara accidentally hit her with their vehicle while she rode along NM-47. They then threw her and her bike into the back of their truck before taking her to a gravel pit. Rivera theorizes that Tara then threatened the boys, saying she should make sure they were arrested and sent to jail, and the boys killed her and disposed of the bike in a junkyard. It was allegedly an open secret that they had murdered Tara and their parents had helped cover it up. However, Rene Rivera ended his statement by saying that without Tara's body, he could not arrest or press charges against anyone. This understandably angered John, who questioned the reasoning behind what the sheriff did. He asked why anyone would make something like that public if he wasn't going to arrest them, even with the circumstantial evidence the sheriff said they had. In the summer of 2009, the photo from the van reappeared in the spotlight after Port Sinsro Police Chief David Barnes received 2 additional photos of a sandy-haired young boy in the mail. One was an original photo, and the other had black marker scribbled over its mouth to resemble tape. The first photo was postmarked June 10th, and the second postmarked August 10th. Both were mailed from Albuquerque with no note or return address. On the 12th of August, the newspaper Port St. Joe Star also received the photo of the boy, with the black marker scribbles over his mouth. The boy in these pictures has never been identified, and it is not clear if it's the same as the one from the Polaroid from June 1989. At the same time as these photos were received, the Gulf County Sheriff's Department was also dealing with a strange lead of their own. They had received a call from a psychic. She claimed to be having visions related to the case. She claimed that Tara was buried in California and made reference to a blue Oldsmobile car. Authorities dismissed her account, but they did note that the timing of her call was unusual. The most recent news from Tara's case came in 2013, when a task force of 6 local and federal agents reopened the investigation into her disappearance. This task force included agents from Homeland Security, New Mexico State Police, Valencia County Sheriff's Office, the Albuquerque Police Department, and the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office. In the same year, in a deathbed confession, Henry Brown told investigators that his neighbor Lawrence Romero Jr. and several friends had openly confessed to killing Tara on the day she went missing, and Romero's father, who was the Valencia County Sheriff at the time, helped cover it up. In 2019, the FBI announced a $20,000 reward for anyone who can provide information as to where Tara was, or information that would lead to the arrest of those responsible for her disappearance. Unfortunately, Tara's mother Patty and her biological father David will never know what happened to her. David was walking home from a bar in November of 2002 when he was mugged. The two muggers stole his wallet, rings, and heart medication. He went home and died in his sleep after suffering a heart attack. Patty and John moved to Port Charlotte, Florida in 2003. Patty suffered a series of strokes and passed away on May 11th, 2006. As of 2017, John Dole was still alive, but with 33 years since Tara was last seen, he may never learn what happened to her either. Thank you for listening to Canonical True Crime. Sources for this week's episode include the Albuquerque Journal, Reddit, Fox News, and more. A full list of this episode's sources is available on our website, canonicaltruecrime.com. Follow us on Instagram at canonicaltruecrime to keep up to date with all the latest news and be the first to know when a new episode drops. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. You can also listen on Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If we aren't on your platform yet, let us know and we'll do our best to get on there. Next time on Canonical True Crime. 5 weeks, 5 abductions, 4 murders, and 1 escape that brought about the end of a violent couple's horrific crime spree. These are stories of five victims of a serial killer couple, Catherine and David Burney.